Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. With over 200,000 locations throughout the U.S. and offering 12,000 different types of batteries, stop into your local Interstate Battery store today and let them help you find the right batteries for your everyday life.
Hey guys, welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith. We're co-owners of a consulting company called, go figure, Land and Legacy. This is your number one podcast resource for all things land.
Each week, we're breaking down topics from land management, habitat management, conservation, farming practices, and real estate. We hope you guys enjoy it.
Hey guys, welcome back. We're super excited for this week's podcast. Going to do things a little bit differently. You've never heard a podcast like this from us, but it's going to be it'll give you guys a good idea of where Matt and I rank things, some of our favorites, and then overall you get a better idea of who we are and our interest. We're going to call this, our top picks maybe.
Sure, top picks, favorites. I think it's a good break into the stuff that we talk about just all the time. We're going to cover some of it, of course, but you know, at the same time, this is a little bit step back, a little bit more, probably more lighthearted, for you guys to get to know us just a little bit better.
And then also you're going to see, you know, when we get into some of these top picks, you're going to understand a little bit about why we like this one over another one, or what it is about this one species that takes the cake, why it's the one that we like so much more. And I've got one I'm going to add here for you, Matt, because I just thought of
it. On
the
fly. We're probably going to ask a lot of questions on the fly.
Yeah,
this
no
podcast,
doubt.
So it's going to be funny and evolving for us. What do you got to add? You're writing. But, I'm excited for the podcast because, like you said, you guys are going to get a little insight more onto us, just personal preference. Yes, of course, it's going to be related to land. We've got a lot of other questions in there, too, for you guys, again, to learn a little bit more about us who host it. And I think some of the answers are going to surprise each other, though, too.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I made a point. You added yours to the document, and I made a point when I printed it off. I just ripped it off, threw it away because I didn't want to see what you wrote.
Gotcha.
This is also going to be a chance for when we post this, we're going to be asking you guys through the next couple of weeks. We'll post a picture of whatever it is on ours, and we'll link the podcast, but then we'll ask you guys what your favorite is.
Yeah.
And so we want you guys to interact with us on our social media handles. Really helps us understand our audience, you guys, your interests, and how we can
deliver more accurate more information that's applicable to what you guys have going on.
For sure.
On your land.
Yeah. So we've got a bunch of questions. But before we do that, let's go ahead and cover a couple things. We've been pumping out some videos every week on our YouTube and Facebook page. And so you guys, if you have, basically, I encourage you to go check them out. We've had the Quail Guys, our upland consultants. So if you guys do know, or you're a landowner and you have a quail property and you're looking to improve it, shoot us an email, shoot us a message on our Facebook page.
Yep.
I almost a little bit hesitant to tell you info@landandlegacy.tv because there has been a few
kickback. There's been some weird little glitches.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
shoot us.
If you can't get it there, if it kicks back, contact us.
Send it to emails.
Media.
Send it to Matt's email.
Yeah. I'll take care of it. Yeah. Or I got you guys.
So, Also, shoot us a review on our Facebook and also iTunes page. Because it really helps us continue building our source here to where we can continue pumping these out. Without you guys, we're left working other jobs, and there'll be no more Land and Legacy. So your guys' support is crucial for us in continuing to do this podcast and video series. Matt, you got anything other stuff to add?
Well, I think before we jump into all the favorites that we're going to go through, we've been busy working and talking a lot of natives here lately, but we cannot forget to do just a quick update on the food plots that were planted and the success that we're seeing in the food plot acres this year. And it's been
We'll devote a whole podcast to it, but real quick, we can give you guys some updates.
And truthfully, we've had an incredible growing season so far. Lots of rain, lots of timely rains.
Too much rain in a couple food plots. That's why we were late getting them in the ground.
But you know what? You deal with it. You life's going to throw you curveballs. But all in all, really, they're doing incredible.
I think one of the biggest things to tell them about is we did something a little different this year. So you'll hear it in this podcast a little later, but my family farm, we've got several food plots, but they're all pretty small, and we don't really have the ability to plant soybean monocultures without fencing and let them grow up, and they're going to make pods and be a great late season.
That just don't happen.
Doesn't happen. No. And most guys in timber country will tell you that.
Sure.
And I'm really, as evolving as a land manager. Yes, it is.
I mean, truthfully.
But evolving as a land manager, I don't really like – I'm not on the fence, I guess. I'm even off the fence now, siding where I'm not a huge fan of fencing off what little food plot acres we have because – it's taken away that resource.
You turn a good resource into simply a hunting strategy versus an improvement to the habitat.
And so we don't do that. But because of our years, as we've been very open about using plows and discs over the years, that it created some bad things for us in our food plots and cows getting out and overgrazing food plots and bare ground, and so nature covers that, and we've had a really bad problem with crabgrass, and it's not written about. I don't see it. I've searched, and I don't find much stuff, but it's got that allelopathic type of
properties that
really, it grows through the summer, and last year we were like, oh, let's just let it grow. It's covering the soil. But then we turned around and we planted our fall plots, and the fall plots didn't do very good at all where that crabgrass was thick.
And it was sprayed before. We didn't even want to go seed. Yeah. Didn't want people to think, like, you guys just let it grow to seed.
No, we sprayed it in July and planted in August, and still it took a long time for that to decay and that basically chemical to get out of the soil to where our fall crops could start growing. So it really stunted, caused us some problems. So this year we planted soybean monocultures, just straight soybeans in all the food plots on the family farm, and waited until early June and went in and sprayed after that crabgrass was already up 4 or 5 inches, sprayed it, killed it, and goosegrass was another one we were dealing with, sprayed it, killed it, and then planted the heritage blend into what standing soybeans we already had. So that's kind of something interesting we've done, and there's a lot of species in that heritage blend that'll do great during the summer months. We've already had some timely rains, so follow along on our YouTube channel. You're going to see us posting videos about it soon, vlogs, I guess I should say. So what else?
The no herbicide food plot, there was a video update after being planted, and that was just a fall blend last year. It got drilled straight through with Stratton Game Changer beans, and right now I'm going back through just from amazement and looking at the pictures. These beans right now are pretty much completely canopied over and filling in that food plot. Very little weed pressure. There is a little bit of mayor's tail that's growing, but within these pictures too, we are seeing that deer are hammering and browsing the mayor's tail that's in the food plot. And I say, they're like, oh my gosh, mayor's tail in the food plot. We're talking like
a few sprigs 10, here or there.
10, 20 sprigs out there. But it's still important to notice and see that, okay, it's there, it's present, but it's also being utilized as a forage, though, too. Yeah.
And a few sprigs of Cerisa lespidiza, which are going to take herbicide to kill, or we're going to have to manually pull them. But that begs the question. I guess we don't know anything about herbicide. Let's just go into it saying, okay, I don't know enough about herbicide. Would you rather spray that over the whole food plot or spot treat it and make sure you kill your noxious weeds, but you don't broadcast it or spray it over a forage that a deer is later going to consume? That's where I'm at. So
this is just a new way of thinking for a lot of people of, do I need it? Like, or, yeah. And do I need it at the broad spectrum application that we're used to dealing with in food plots? And so far, what we're seeing is right now, wow. We don't have to use
incredible.
Hardly any.
Yeah.
Incredible success. And again, this is just drilling straight through, no termination whatsoever of any fall crop, drilling beans right through it. Man, it looks incredible.
It does.
Really good.
All right. And follow along. We're going to have – we'll do a complete update on all food plots later on in the summer as we know more. But until then, we are going to rip through, I don't know, 30 questions here on our top picks for different species.
Absolutely.
Or different hunts or different things. So we're going to cover a wide variety of things. But first one, our favorite tree. And I added this. You didn't see it, but I added evergreen and deciduous.
Oh.
So right. Pretty easy for me. Probably going to be pretty easy for you. But my favorite tree is probably not going to be a shock, but the bur oak.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple fact that it's just such a cool and mighty tree. And in a Sand County Almanac, I read something that really sticks out to me now, but he talked about the armor from the base, from the trunk, all the way up to the very ends of the tree being thick bark to prevent it from fire damage. And, you know, once you start looking at a tree, it's like one of those that once you see that armor, even when there's no leaves on, dead of winter, and you just see it on the horizon, it's like, there's a bur oak.
I can tell a bur oak from hundreds of yards away, yeah, amongst other trees.
Yeah.
Especially like along a creek, you're like, there is a bur oak down there. And they're, yep, like, and people are like, wait, there's what? How do you know? I'm like, I can tell it because look at the shape of that tree and the structure of that tree. It is just... It is mighty. It
screams,
intense.
Come at me, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it just has a presence in a stand of timber that is like, wow, I wouldn't want to mess with that guy.
That's right.
He's that guy in high school. You're like, no, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. You're good, man.
And the acorns, enough of you people are commenting that it gives me a little bit of insecurities about it, but are really cool, really big. Deer love them. Squirrels love them. A lot of game eat them.
Highly attractive.
And it's just a really, really cool species. So that's why it's my favorite.
I right there with you. People are like, oh, that's stupid. You guys have the same favorite tree. But seriously, if you're, yeah, not familiar with them, if you've not been around them, they're incredibly awesome trees. I love it for the exact same reasons. And truthfully, too, most of the times where the bur oaks are still remaining, that landscape is awesome and can be managed, and it's extremely diverse. And so not only the presence, yeah, not only the presence of that tree, but just where it is and almost the atmosphere that
they have. That's a pretty big range, so everybody should be familiar
with them.
New Mexico to Maine and Ontario and a whole bunch of other Canada places.
Some of them provinces up there.
Yeah, and all the way into Alabama. So it's huge range, the bur oak. Favorite,
yeah,
evergreen for me is the only native pine that we have here in where I call home, and it's the shortleaf pine.
Yeah, it's a pretty fantastic one, too.
Slow grower. It's not one of those you see planted in the plantations down south because it is such a slow-growing tree, but... Man, there's some on my farm, on the neighboring farm, that just have this similar to the bur oak, but very like a mighty feel. But there's nothing quite like the sound of wind through a pine tree. So
there's not at all, and especially when you have the ability of more of an open canopy type feel, more of a woodland savanna, because you do get so much air rushing through, and it's just like, it's almost like a calming sound.
It is.
It's like a very peaceful, like you feel the breeze, you're out there in it, and it's just like that. It's almost like a, what do you call them? Like
white
the sleep
noise.
Yeah. White noise. Exactly.
White noise machine. I was getting ready to tell you, you know, my daughter sleeps with a white noise machine, and it's white noise is the thing. So it's just that very staticky sound. Mm-hmm. But if they made a white noise machine with wind through
pines,
I'd be like,
I'm out.
Sign me up. I'll do it.
You know what the other thing is about like the senses, the smells, the feel of just outdoors? That's
spring
incredible.
Pollen?
No. It is the, like on a warm summer day, the smell of pine straw.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like when it warms up and you, like,
yeah,
you could walk through a pine stand, it'd be shaded, and then you could get to like a sunny spot,
yeah,
and like all of a sudden that like aromaticness,
oh, yeah,
just hits you like, Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like it.
For sure. Favorite shrub?
I'm going American hazelnut.
Oh, very cool. Definitely one of my favorites, but not my favorite. Why hazelnut?
Well, it grows on a lot of different places. I like hazelnut coffee. And one, it can produce a hard mast year one, but two and three, you're producing a good crop. And it's incredible because of the browse that it also can endure once it sets a good root system from, you know, buds to the leaves to the actual fruit itself. Every aspect of it is attractive, and then it produces cover as well. And that's, well, we go right back to the shrub podcast. I mean, my gosh, that's what shrubs do. That's why we love them so much, and they have such a big role. But something about that, just American hazelnut, it's part of the birch family, usually, 3 to 4 foot tall. So it's just in that perfect range of, it's kind of can be a little bit of a bushier, denser type shrub.
Yeah.
So that's why I like it.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
And there's American in it, too.
Yep.
America.
What? Any guesses on my favorite?
American plum?
Nope. You're close. American beautyberry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I should have known that one.
Just because of the so many beneficial things. As the hazelnut, but the beautyberry to me is just so cool because of its benefits as a structure, its benefits from a forage standpoint, browse as both berries too. But at the same time, it kind of handles that shade in a woodland setting a lot better than a lot of other shrubs.
That's a great quality of it.
And so, you know, and it's a very, as much as I hate the word, it's a very aesthetically pleasing
Well, it has its place not only in the wild, like in the native landscape, but in landscaping as well.
For sure.
And it's like, what other shrub could you mistake it for? There's not one.
No.
You know, like when you see it.
It honestly looks like an ornamental because it is so showy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you wouldn't see anybody taking hawthorn and sticking it in the landscaping.
No, you wouldn't. But it's like, it stands out. It's its own man in
the
crowd.
Or we're going to jump around because we're not going to go through all the plants all right out of the gate and then to say, I don't want to hear them ramble on about the favorite,
these daggum plants. Stuff.
So let's go with what is your favorite hunt? Like if you were to pick one hunt to do or, you know, one
like
hunting season.
Hunt?
No, oh, okay. one hunt during the year, a course of a year. On average, like, what is the one hunt that you like the best? Like, do you like bow hunting whitetails? Do you like gun hunting whitetails? Do you like spring turkeys with a shotgun, spring turkeys with a bow, quail hunting, rabbit hunting, duck hunting?
Spring turkeys with a shotgun.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain rush. There's a certain communication aspect of working that animal in, figuring out the land, understanding the lay of the land, and the best route to just seal the deal on a turkey.
Yeah, for sure.
Gosh, I love it.
And I hope everybody's thinking, this is why we're doing this podcast, because I want everybody as they're listening to try to think of their favorite too.
And the reasons behind it too. That's why we're sharing the reasons, not just, oh, I like to shoot a turkey.
Yeah.
Like there's reasons behind what it is about the aspect, the experience that gets you outside.
Yeah. Mine's right there too, turkeys in the spring. If you were to say like block off just, you know, get more definitive on that, I'm going to say Southern Missouri, family farm. That's most years. Flooding has really hurt him the past couple of years. But family farm during the last week of April, first week of May, and chasing turkeys. All right. Favorite caliber of gun? Like if you were to just go from whatever. Let's just say put you in a plane, and you've got one gun to take you and – you know, it goes from favorite gun to just plink with or shoot, recreational shoot, to just like you had one gun in your house. Which one would you get?
I'd have a 308.
Okay.
And for the purpose of its versatility, it's a very common round, but it has the ability to have some knockdown power. The wide range of grain that a bullet itself can have within the 308 caliber is pretty pretty awesome. I mean, you can sit there.
So this is your survival gun here that you're just like, I'm going to, this is my one gun that I'm having in the house. And
like survival as in like defending myself or what, for like
just
hunting?
Just hunting. Like, okay. I'm putting food hunting. On the table.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
308.
Yeah.
I love that caliber.
I forgot I didn't put favorite deer rifle.
Okay.
Because I'm going to ask that question too. But this is favorite caliber. So overall, like if I was just to say, hey, we're going to Bass Pro and Cabela's Academy.
We're gonna shoot something.
We're going to pick up a gun of just whatever. What caliber are you going to get? I'm a 22 guy. Like I would, you can kill a pile of stuff with a 22. You can have a pile of fun with the 22. You can pass it on to a lot of people. So that's mine. But if I ask favorite deer rifle, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
I'm a plinker. I think of as a kid, like that was a huge thing. Like I would, if you got me a box of 22 shells as a kid, you know, man, that was the best present.
That's a lot of fun for sure.
It is. Yeah. So favorite deer rifle. You told me caliber 308, but do you have a certain model in mind?
No, I don't. I'm not married to any exact one. You know, growing up,
favorite so
like,
far in life, let's just say.
One that holds a little special place is actually a 243 that my dad had as a Ruger M77, I believe. And I did not rifle hunt often at all.
Yeah.
Like I grew up with a shotgun in my hands and then went to a muzzleloader. And went to a bow, and then honestly really went into a rifle situation about the same time I was getting introduced to archery. And that 243, I saw my dad carry it all the time. And we shot groundhogs with it, shot deer with it. And it kind of has that definitely not worn out look at all, but it's a little bit of wear and tear. And it just feels really good. It shoulders really well, and it's great caliber. That 243, I ended up killing a lot with it. So
I think mine would probably be a model 7308 that I used for a couple of years.
That was a good gun.
Ooh,
felt yeah. Really, really good.
Yeah, that's probably been the best shouldering shooting gun that I've carried. But once again, I started out with a slug gun. Hated that. Then I used a Dirty 30 Winchester Model 94. I actually killed my first deer with it. That's the gun my dad hunts with. And then I got a Remington, semi-auto 30-06 that I like, but it was just not the
daggone shoulder cannon.
Sweet shooter that I like. So, but it was still, dad still got that gun, pretty sweet gun. But Winchester Model 70, 308 is definitely
that's
my
tough to beat.
Pick. Favorite non-game. So, you know, I have bird in here, but let's just go favorite non-game. So it can be anything, any part of the country, I guess any part of the world, but something that we don't hunt that you enjoy.
I would, someone's going to be like, oh, well, I hunt it or I trap it. But there's something absolutely, and I've always been fascinated with them, but is the beaver. The beaver's awesome. Is that what you put?
No.
Oh.
No.
Well, that's, I don't know. They're just incredible creatures in what they do, what they create.
Oh, yeah.
And
this conversation on social media just the other day with somebody, maybe yesterday, that between a coyote and a beaver, I'm not sure which one's more hated. And I think if you're, it depends on part of the world I think you're in.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But the American beaver is definitely one of those that's really underrated. I would encourage everybody to go look up Eager, The Surprising and Secret Life of Beavers. Really, really interesting book. Opens your eyes on beavers. So if you hate them, it'd be a good one for you to sit and with a sour look on your face
you.
The whole time.
They're absolutely incredible. Their history, their prevalence, their comeback. And again, what they do, not only from, I think, and this has an impact, this animal has an impact on our water system so greatly, that we've totally underestimated it as a species.
Well, in that book, I would encourage you guys, because you get tidbits like this the whole time, but they estimate that right now we have like 1.5 million beavers
in North America, and at some point in the 1500s, 1600s, they thought it was 200 or 300 million. Holy cow, way more than what we had.
If you don't think that doesn't change North America and what it looked like, you're crazy.
Yeah, and that almost every secondary stream, basically Mississippi, Missouri, those main rivers, weren't. They still had them on them, and they were building dens or lodges and dams on the side channels and sloughs. But almost every other secondary stream was not free-flowing like it is today. It was more of a pools, tricklings, and really that's what a lot of our what created the water levels to be so much higher than they are today. But go check out that book, American Beaver.
Probably learn a lot. What about your favorite non-game?
Mine kind of has, you know, small little Tweety Bird that they've heard me talk about before. But right now, I mean, this could change. And you ask me next year, I may have a different one. But right now, my favorite non-game is probably a summer tanager.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its, you know, its direct impact on telling us that our habitat work is improving.
Is it indicator species?
And so, you know, we've done all that woodland restoration just on that 90 acres, and we've seen way more summer tanagers this year on it. I've always been fascinated with them. Ever since I saw the first one years ago, they have an amazing call. They're just a really, really cool bird. So that's mine. Nothing too fancy, but a bright red bird. Let's see. You got anything else? You got one you want to pick?
What is your dream hunt?
Oh, like, that's easy. Ever since one of my dear friends, Luke Anderson, shot a moose. He shot his in Canada. Mm-hmm. I think it was Ontario. But we, part of our trade, we would go up there and stay at his house and hunt some public land close to his home.
Right.
But he grilled moose burgers for us in exchange for hanging the moose head way high in his A-framed park. Like, it was one of those, like, vault-like ceilings, I guess.
Monster peaks.
Yeah, and so
that was a challenge, I bet.
There was two guys. I'm trying to remember how this was. I think there was two guys on a ladder, one a little higher than the other, and then two guys on the side, and then another guy. No, there was two ladders, I believe. And then there was guys with brooms underneath pushing it up. Took us forever. Oh, wow. But once I had that moose burger, I was like, that's the greatest game I've ever eaten.
Mm.
I love the last frontier, Alaska, the mindset of, like, you know, this is a landscape that hasn't changed in forever. And I want to go to Alaska on a moose hunt.
Wow.
You?
I would love to just do an archery elk hunt, but have, like, the opportunity to do some upland bird hunting and fishing at the same time. So basically like a week long of just like elk hunting in the morning, eat, either shoot some birds, go throw a line in the water, and just be in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah.
And just disappear, be gone, leave the phone, and just be immersed in that environment. I've never gone elk hunting. That's definitely on the list to do one of these days, but just have that opportunity, put all those fun things together would be awesome.
Very cool. All right, let's break it up a little bit. Favorite TV show?
Oh gosh, I think I left that one blank.
You know,
that's been
I don't watch a lot of TV.
I don't have cable.
My wife and I, we watch Netflix because we don't have cable either, and what we've, you know, it's kind of like background noise, but there's one TV show, and this has changed a little bit, and I got to give props to my brother. I used to make fun of him for watching this show because I didn't like it. But as my wife and I started dating, and I started watching with her more, and I'd watch it with my brother growing up, but now it's my favorite show. I could watch it over and over and over, and it's The Office.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Honestly, and this one, I thought about it, you know, this goes back, I guess, to probably more like high school, college. But I like that show, American Pickers on the History Channel. Have you ever watched that?
I watched it a little bit back in the day.
Those two guys just traveling around this whole stinking country, picking up old trash and selling it. Does it get any better than that?
It's kind of like Antique Roadshow was when I was a kid. We watched that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I have an appreciation, I don't know if it's old soul or whatever, for just old things and the craftsmanship. way back when. But those guys, they understand it, they get it, and they encounter some cool stuff. So,
yeah. Let's go with favorite landscape. Now, you may say, what in the world are you guys talking about? That could be, I said prairie, could be grassland. I guess I should explain. I went with prairie because that's a type of grassland. And then I went with savanna, which is also another type of grassland. Then woodland, which is a forest type ecosystem. Glade, which is a grassland. You could pick desert, bog, swamp.
Yeah. honestly, for me, growing up in Virginia, and that being one of the first places ever settled and colonized, like that ground just went through so many changes, and so there was not much left, not manipulated, if you will, by man that I was grown up and immersed in. So one thing that's always just been increasingly captivating to me is just the Grand Prairie, like a tall grass prairie of its diversity, of just its incredibleness. Like I go out there and I see it, and I'm just taken back from the views. And then you look on the ground, and you're like, holy cow, all this is just right here. And they're so hard. A true virgin prairie is so hard to replicate and bring back. It's like that 300-plus species, you know, you can't mimic that. Yeah. Like, it's so incredible.
So where's that at, Grand Prairie?
Grand Prairie is actually Arkansas.
Oh, God, you're talking, okay.
I'm just saying,
I thought you were talking about a place in
oh, okay, not like a
I thought there was a Grand Prairie in Virginia that you talked about.
No. I'm just saying, just like, in general, the prairie.
Yeah.
But I think the Grand Prairie is in Arkansas. Yeah. That's a place, actually.
Mine would have to be woodlands.
Gotcha.
And this is really a hard one for me, because I do love glades and I love savannas. But I think a woodland probably hits home the most because that's what my farm is, should be, I should say. And it's one of those things that it's so underappreciated and under the knowledge of woodlands is not there. A lot of people don't, when you say woodland, they think of forest, closed canopy forest,
right,
but
right.
It's not. And it's one of those that's, you know, it can support so many different species. It's kind of a very productive landscape that I definitely like. So
it's definitely versatile. I mean, it can do and hold a lot.
Let's see. And to me, you know what, that's the difference. That's why I didn't say prairie.
Yeah.
For me, because I try to picture, like, would I rather live in a woodland? Would I rather live in a savanna? Would I rather live on a glade?
I wouldn't want to live in a prairie.
I would not want to live in a prairie.
I wouldn't. No. But I love going and visiting. Yeah. And it's like, this is incredible.
Like I lived in Southwest Nebraska last year when we were on that. It was amazing.
Incredible.
But 2 days into that heat on the prairie, I was like, I freaking hate this.
Well, and it's like, I'm okay to have heat, but I want an escape from heat.
Yeah, there is no escape. No.
Those daggum mule deer were digging caves into the side of hills just to find some shade and cool sand.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm sorry. I can't do extended periods like this.
Folks back east wonder why don't he write? Oh, man. Okay, let's see here. So woodland. I could live in a woodland.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I can even live in a savanna. But woodland kind of feels a little bit more like home. Let's go with favorite style of hunting.
Ooh, good one. I like.
And it's going to be different names for people, but yeah,
what
just,
do you mean?
Yeah, people are going to call things different.
Oh, sure. I like just your, I don't know, classic bow, like archery hunt, pre-rut in a stand. Like that type of style is super fun to me. I grew up hunting, and it might offend people, but I mean, it's heritage. I grew up hunting with dogs and like running dogs and running deer. So I've done like every type of whitetail hunting possible, but there's something about like the combination.
Spotlight?
Not that. but like, there's something about the combination of a bow in your hand, late October, early November, pre-rut, Things are happening, deer are active. I just love that intensity because it's a game. It's a puzzle piece that you're putting all together. I like that challenge, and it's fun. Had a lot of success that
I won't
that
disagree with that at all from the fact that that is an amazing time, but it's a very small period, and I wouldn't dare do that with turkeys.
Oh gosh.
So obviously a person with ADHD who can't sit still, run and gun is my favorite style of hunting. And you know, that's what I enjoyed about Nebraska last year was this very much moving a lot, you know,
glass
setting
a
down.
Little bit.
Yeah. And maybe that's why we weren't successful. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, I really enjoy that type, especially for turkeys, but also with quail, with squirrels. So definitely enjoy run and gun. Let's jump back to...
Shoot, you ought to just do some run and gun with the bow and arrow. Just stay on your feet.
Yeah, that's right. I used to.
I know.
Wasn't very successful with it, but I used
to.
Gosh. Honestly, though.
Only in burned areas. You know what you need to do? You need to create like a track around the property that's like, I'm gonna burn these areas. I'm going to use this as my path, my sneaking path. And get around so there's no leaf litter. You're an Indian sneaking around.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, when I used to do that run and gun as a young hunter, I didn't know anything really. I really
wind?
Feel like.
What's that?
What now?
Wind?
Yeah,
what's
yeah.
That?
Like, oh, I'm going to walk this way. Having no idea. Did not carry a wind checker.
Why are the hairs on the back of my neck just tickling me right now?
Yeah. Why are the leaves blowing that way?
Yeah.
I think now, if especially like a traditional archer, like it would be really, really, really cool to just do very slow spot and stalk moving around.
It would be really, really neat for sure.
But at the same time, the way we set our properties up is not like ideal
for
that.
That.
Yeah. No. So maybe one day I'll get permission to go on somebody else's property and I'll do that.
Yeah. Or when a buck gets on a
pattern. Here's
a
little key of advice too. If you want to really, really, really
he's serious about this.
Tick somebody off. Go do spot and stalk spot and stalk run and gun style bow hunting on public land.
Yeah, no kidding.
Call up those hunting public guys, ask them where they're hunting, go do it with them.
Horrible advice. Yeah. Zach, he doesn't mean that.
Yeah. Oh man. Let's see here. Let's jump back over and favorite small game.
Rabbit.
Cottontail rabbit, huh?
Man, that
I knew you were going to say that because I know that was a big part of your childhood.
Huge, 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 huge. We had, Uncle had beagles, and we had, I don't know, four or five. If it was January, February, we were on the weekends going rabbit hunting, stomping briar patches, kicking brush, and shooting rabbits. And I loved eating them, too. It was just so much fun watching the dogs work, do their thing. I loved it.
Yeah.
So I haven't rabbit hunted, my gosh, probably since I was 15.
We're going to do that this winter.
Whew.
We're going to do that in a squirrel hunt because that's
wrong
my
with
favorite.
That.
Gray squirrel.
Well, gray squirrel.
Because
squirrel.
That was my childhood.
Yeah.
I can remember even being in middle school. My brother was in high school. A lot of our people we knew, especially older guys, were bow hunting. And it'd be October, mid-October, and we'd be out squirrel hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we talked. One winter, we're like, we're going to buy bows this next summer. We're going to bow hunt next year. So this year, we're just going to go around squirrel hunting and try to learn and scout.
Right, right.
So we covered a lot of ground, checking scrapes and rubs, carrying 22s.
Right.
So squirrel hunting is definitely my favorite small game. So a lot of people hate them on a tree stand, but they are an awesome
little they're fun.
Creature.
That's what I
see. There's
I
target
did that
rich, man.
Oh, you're darn right.
All right. And jump back up to favorite hunting show as a kid.
I watched a ton of Real Tree Road Trips.
Oh, yeah?
With Boy. Old Michael Waddell. I
Man
just,
alive.
Yeah. I
show
watched
your
a,
age.
I watched a pile of them. Those first, like, I think, I don't know, five years of that.
When he started out in the Bronco?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
before he had the Chevy?
Yep. Man, that was... I was just like, it just, that was like the age where you're just so into something. Like you're just like finding your passions and
yep.
Hunting was it for me, at that age. And I was just so ingrained. I was like, why would I watch anything else?
Yep. Mine
Real
was Primos.
Yep.
Primos.
the truth.
I had a truth video, and then I had a spring thunder.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was that.
Primos and the hunting, and when they launched the truth about bow hunting, that was back in DVD days. And so I remember going to Bass Pro as soon as they got them in and be looking for the DVDs. I don't even think they carry the DVDs at Bass Pro anymore. Used to be a whole section.
There used to be a monster section.
And you'd go in, and they'd have them playing on a TV.
Yep.
And my brother and I would always be like, they got it in yet? Oh, they got the new truth. Yeah. I'll buy the truth about deer hunting. You buy the truth about bow hunting. And so, I mean, and I was decked out in Primo stuff. I was a miniature Wilbur Primos whenever I was a kid.
I remember, like, watching the reading the back of the DVDs, and you know how like it would list out like 27 awesome deer hunts, 37 or whatever. I'd just get the most. Whichever DVD sold me on the most hunts, it goes like, yep, I got my money.
Yeah.
Done.
All right. I'll ask another one that's not on here. Favorite hunting personality as a kid?
Oh, wow.
I mean, I would assume it's Mike Waddell since that was your...
I mean, that was... I wouldn't say favorite. I never like had one that was just like,
the
oh
man.
My gosh, I just idolized you. No, I never was like that. I guess I just wanted to consume that stuff. So I wouldn't. I don't think I had a favorite.
Oh, I definitely did. Will Walker with Primos was my favorite. That man could shoot, and kind of was the guy that like always had a good time. So even if he missed, he laughed.
Yeah,
he rarely
yeah.
missed, but he made incredible shots, and he was still laughing. He never.
Right.
Was too serious, like some of the yahoos out there, where it's just like, I'm trying not to step on it too many toes, but it was like, the face paint's perfect. We're out here. I just shot a big deer. Oh, my goodness, look at this.
Yeah.
He was just like laughing the whole time.
Just
so that's
laid back.
Yeah, it was so much fun to watch. Favorite hunting podcast?
Oh, I saw that one on there. If I had to, name one, it would probably be Meat Eater. I don't listen to that many hunting podcasts though.
Yeah,
I really don't. Really hardly any at all.
Yeah.
But I think it's a quality show. I like some of the conversations that they address.
Yeah.
And some of the views that are on there. So
yep.
it's always interesting.
Yep,
that's
mine, Meat Eater.
Okay.
And like you said, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I do listen. I don't listen to a lot of hunting podcasts.
Yeah,
I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of audiobooks. But when I do, I try to catch each Meat Eater podcast. So since we're on that non-hunting podcast,
I'm a big fan of
Delivering Pizzas.
The Dave Ramsey podcast, basically any of those from his group of folks, specifically the Entree Leadership one. That's a great podcast. There's a lot of just quality information out there. So that would be my favorite.
Delivering
yourself?
Pizzas. Craig Groeschel's Leadership Podcast.
Yep.
That's a really good
fantastic one.
It's only once a month, maybe twice a month if he releases a bonus, but I'm going to encourage all you guys, Craig Groeschel's Leadership Podcast, Dave Ramsey Leadership Podcast. Awesome.
Yeah.
Life learning podcast.
Oh, for sure.
Rather than listen to
personal development
if
stuff.
If cabbages had legs, we'd hunt them too. That was one of the latest meteors. Really good podcast, but there's a lot of really deep stuff on Craig Groeschel or Dave Ramsey. Let's go with favorite. Getting back to some of our plants. Favorite food plot plant.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. I went back and forth so much, and I'm not even dead set on this one.
Yeah.
Because truthfully, you don't plant it that much,
yeah.
but there's something just so attractive about it. And I like the fact that it can be planted in so many different ways. I'm going to say alfalfa.
Yeah. You've talked to Seth Harker today.
I have not. He's on a kick, though. He's loving it.
He told me today, he goes, I think there's a reason why everybody says alfalfa's amazing.
I love it.
And he was mentioning big names in the industry.
Yeah.
Alfalfa is definitely awesome. The reason why I didn't select that is I felt like clover is a little bit more of a plant that could take some shadier situations. Mm-hmm. And so I chose clover, and you can put that with red clover, but a perennial or even an annual clover for that matter. I like clover, and there's a reason why I picked this over soybeans, over corn, is because you can plant these real quick in my head, rattle through all the states we've worked, 27 of them, I guess, in 2.5 years.
All of them.
Every single one of those states can have clover, but not every single one of those properties could grow soybeans or grow corn.
Mm-hmm.
That clover, and it can take a beating. Deer can come in there every night and graze the heck out of it and still comes back. And it, maintenance, it doesn't take a lot of herbicide. You can keep mowing it, addressing, dropping in other species. But really, the base of clover food plot, once you get it established, and it's really not hard to get established, is there.
And there's a lot of other tips and little things to improve the forage.
Yep.
And keep it relatively, I don't know, I can say maintenance-free at all, but just make sure you don't have to maintain it as intensely as other food plots. So, yeah, clover's great.
We got a lot of questions, so we'll kind of speed up things a little bit here. Favorite bird?
Oh, gosh. I fell in love with this bird in ornithology class back in college. I saw it on a pond, and I was like, holy cow, that, like, the colors are just absolutely incredible, very unique, but it's a northern shoveler.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Like the beautiful chestnut brown into the green and like the white-ish color. Man, it's a beautiful bird.
Smileys.
Huh?
Smiley. That's the nickname for him.
Oh. Never heard of that one. What about
Northern Bobwhite?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Obvious reasons, but man, I love that bird. Let's go with favorite land management tool. So if you were to only have one, you just bought a farm, you could only buy one.
Give me a chainsaw, baby. I can do a lot with a chainsaw. I can make a lot of habitat, a lot of improvements. I can maintain the farm. It'll take some work, but it's extremely versatile. You're going to use it, man, a ton of the time.
Yep.
Ton of the time.
I'm the same way. And I was so torn on drip torch because you can do so much. But the window to use a drip torch is so much smaller than a chainsaw. So
that's right.
Chainsaw is number one.
I will say this. Favorite land management technique, though, not necessarily.
Well, that's
tool.
Another question on
I
here.
I know. I'm
Where's
going
that
to
at?
It.
Technique.
I do love prescribed fire.
Yeah, that was my favorite, too.
I mean, gosh, there's not another tool out there that you can just cover so many acres and do such an amazing
prescribed fire is one of those that you can
job.
Do it all day, work your tail off, be completely whooped, and then at the end of it, sit up on it, smiling, go, boy, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You don't dirty, do TSI out. All day and then go, boy, that was a lot of fun.
Not typically. No. But yeah, prescribed fire, man, it's just, it's so visual too.
Yeah.
Like it's just in your face. Holy cow, I just changed this place.
Favorite sport outside of hunting?
I love to golf.
Yeah.
I haven't golfed in over
two,
a year.
2 years? Or?
Probably 2 years. But I played in college, and it's just a ton of fun. Maybe one day I'll get back into it, but I love the sport. Yeah. People think it's dumb and this and that, but it's definitely a mental game for sure. What about you?
Baseball. Yeah. It's the sport that I played most growing up, and it's a sport that when I do have time, I try to catch the cards. It's one that I still really, really enjoy watching. It's not something like I watch it and I'm like, oh, there's so much other stuff I could do. When I watch baseball, it's really just a game of, I don't know, strategy.
Right.
So anyway, that's mine. Let's go with favorite thing to take to a stand. Tree stand.
My bow.
I mean, I'm talking not the essentials, like you have to have it, but something you take with you. And it's so stupid, but a phone is the thing for me because you can read books. I can read Bibles. I can read the Bible. I can scroll through Facebook. I used to take books with me,
but it's much harder to get a book put away when a deer is coming in than a phone. So that's why I like the phone a lot better.
You're going to lose your page. I mean, my gosh. No, I don't know. I don't really take that much to the stand. Honestly, of course, I have my phone with me, and I'm on it some. But a lot of times, I just sit back and just enjoy it.
He's lying. I'll send you pictures. He's on his phone a lot. Seriously.
I'm not saying I'm not on my phone, but, man, I just like just sitting there and being in it, slowing down.
Next question. 1 week on Earth. Obviously, you're going to spend a majority of that time with family. But in that 1 week, God comes down and says, you got 1 week left. You can go on one hunt. One. Doesn't matter time of the year. It's just you can have whatever hunt you want during that one day. What do you do?
It's one day. Oh, man. You said 1 week.
I'm saying you're spending most of that week with your family, but you got.
I said Grand Slam turkey.
Oh, gotcha.
Like I would like to accomplish that.
So you're trying to accomplish a Grand Slam in that 1 week. Sorry, family. I'm selfish. He's picking the turkeys. Yeah, I was doing a quail hunt with family and friends because I could still spend time with them.
I take my dad and brother with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord, just send them a bird too, but let me shoot first.
Yeah. Well, we killed one in Florida. Well, I got my tag now. Well, sorry, we're going to New Mexico.
Yeah, we're off again.
Yeah, 1 week.
I got one on week, Earth. You jerk.
Quail hunt was mine. Not because I enjoy that so much more than turkey or deer, but for the fact that it's like with your buddies and you're with a dog, and that's what I started out hunting, so that's kind of the one where it's like, if I came into this world hunting quail, I'm going to go out of this world chasing quail.
Yeah, yeah. Here's one. What's like your favorite just hunt memory of, successful hunt? Not necessarily like a camaraderie thing or like a family thing, but just like that was like the hunt that I just always kind of go back to in my mind. That's, I love it.
Oof. First turkey with dad.
First turkey.
That was one of the things that got me hooked on hunting more than anything. Any duck hunt, any deer hunt. It was that first turkey. Because up until that point, I enjoyed the farm, but I was probably more about the tractors and the cows than I was hunting. And right. When I killed that first turkey with dad, it shook me to my core, and then boom, I've been just passionate about turkeys, and that led to all of this here right. With Landon Legacy. So, first turkey with dad.
First turkey.
Yelled so loud that my brother heard us on the other side of the farm.
I believe it.
You?
Gosh. I had a lot of good deer hunts, but one of the ones, honestly, the one in Kansas, I just think of like a hunt coming together from that deer there back behind you, the triple beam deer. It's like from the encounters earlier that day to making a move to seeing it all come together, Aaron at like 20 yards. That was like, that was just a fun hunt, yeah. You know?
I'll share a story. This isn't hunting related. It's fishing related, but it just came to mind. My granddad celebrated his 95th birthday a few weeks ago, and we were trying to write up memories, so put them in a pot, and so he can sit down and read through all of them.
Right.
I didn't realize this till just recently, but the last time Grandpa and I ever fished together in the boat together, so we had this little pond prowler two-man boat, and in whatever year it was, in that spring, we went white bass fishing. Mm-hmm. My brother was there. He fished on the bank. But we caught our complete limit. And the last few we caught were pretty small. But I was just like, it's really cool. I don't know when the next time Grandpa and I are going to be on the boat and we're going to be able to say we limited out. So we just continued fishing, even though it was really cold that day. Water was up. It was kind of a drizzly day. Grandpa did his traditional, hey, why don't you drive troll up that way a little while so I can troll. He always loved trolling.
Yep.
And we did that, and we ended up catching our limit. And later that summer, so that was in the spring, later that summer he started really having heart issues and ended up having open heart surgery later that year. And that really took a toll on him. And that was the last time we ever fished in that boat together. And that was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And
it was one of those where it's like that itch in the back of going, why don't you continue fishing? Keep right. fishing. I know it's cold and you're just catching short, like small fish right now, but just keep fishing because, you know, there was something knocking saying, this just is going to be a trip you
out.
Remember.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that's like, I said it, it's an office quote, go figure, but it's like, don't you wish you knew you were in the good old days when you were still in, before you'd already left them?
Right.
And that was like, that was a golden trip that we had no idea was going to be the last time. I mean, it's been right. 11 years, but yeah. So there, that's something that's came to mind. It's like, whew.
There was a time, it was like the perfect scenario. My granddad loved to fall turkey hunt. That's what he just grew up doing. He taught my dad how
with the dog.
With a dog.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, dog go out in front, find the flock, bark, birds would flush. You go back in and you call them. He just loved to do that. But one fall, I was probably 15, 16, dad had run up a flock of turkeys and busted them up. And it happened to be on a woods road going out to the back field of one of the farms. And dad's like, granddad had been feeling good. And was like, yeah, I'll just go sit with you. It's kind of a mild, like, late October day. So not, like, too cold or anything.
Yeah.
And we're like, we could just drive them like right there and just drop them off. And dad's like, okay, well, some birds kind of went this way. And then the rest of the flock went this way. You two just sit here and I'll just go sit, you know, sit up on the other side and we'll just see what comes back to call. And, we sat there, never heard a bird, but I always remembered it from this fact of like, I get to like fall turkey hunt with my granddad. Like,
yeah.
this is awesome. Well, I'm there's no bird answering. There's no nothing. But like, we were just out there just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he loved. Like, this was his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zero success. We didn't limit out. Sorry. Not a closer story. But it was one of those things that I really only had one good time in my life that he was healthy enough and just the whole situation worked out where he could go with us. And the one time was good enough, man. I just won't ever forget it.
I remember that going back to that fishing trip, you know, my whole childhood, we had that same boat. He had a little red Toyota pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And we would pull up and my brother and I'd usually stand on the side when we were so small. Then my brother could help him as he got a little older. But we would stand on the side and grandpa would unload the whole boat by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And spin it around, put it in the water, get everything situated. Then he would go drive the truck up while we stood by the boat, make sure it didn't float off or whatever.
Yeah.
And load all the gear up. On that trip, he stood off on the side as I got out,
mm-hmm.
unloaded the boat, did all the things, then helped him in the boat exactly the way he did it for me. It's kind of that like, wow, we've come a long ways. Yeah.
Not to get off topic, but there was another time, you know, like older folks when, you know, they've worked hard, like, and they can't like lift their arms up very high. Like their shoulders are just like worn
shot.
Out. Yeah. Well, granddad had a double barrel and this was when I was probably 7 or 8 and we went down to this one farm that he knew the landowner, and basically just a ton of deer on this big ag farm down on the Rappahannock River. Anyhow, deer comes out. We were doing like these little man drives or whatever, and it comes and it's this big field, probably 200 yards across. And just kind of see it come and just like, here it comes. And it like, okay, now we're realizing, okay, it's going to come between like granddad and I. And we're kind of sitting on the edge and he's like 50 yards down behind me or down to my right. And the deer kind of turns and makes its way. And it's like 30-ish yards from him. And that joker just throws up that gun as if like shoulders were perfectly fine. And he had 2 triggers on the gun and just boom, boom, like just as quick as like easy. Like he's obviously been doing his whole life, but not at like 80 some years old. And it's just one of those things like, how did he do that? Like, you can't hardly button your top button anymore, but you just threw up a double barrel on this deer and fired 2 shots under 2 seconds apart from one another and killed deer. It's just crazy. But
yeah.
It's one of those weird things that you just, you're like, you're always like, oh, yeah, you're like my hero. But it was one of those, like, superhuman things. You're like, what? I couldn't even do that right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing, dude?
Yeah, that's funny. All right, running out of time, but let's get through. Favorite grass?
Mm. I struggle with this one a lot.
Yeah.
This one was tough, and I'm probably not dead set on it, but I went actually with Eastern Gamma Grass for the purpose of really only for the purpose of it being a warm season grass, but it coming in early from a April May standpoint, from a nesting success standpoint, and what it can do. The cover that it can provide from being a very bunch grass,
yep,
early into a nesting season, and then it being there obviously present through the rest of the summer. So yep. I almost went cool season grasses.
But, I saw in the notes that was one that I saw you put like river oats.
Yeah, I'd gone there. And I was like, but truthfully, that doesn't have that exact same purpose. It can certainly, but I'm going Eastern Gamma.
I went with Little Blue Stem.
Yeah.
You know, and I think just in the name, people think, oh, it's little. But we've seen it get
weaker,
4 foot tall,
and
it's like that's all it needs to be. And
right.
It's really a cluster grass, bunch grass, and just, you know, it's not too tall. It's beneficial to deer, turkeys, but also quail. It's not like switchgrass where it's like, oh, that stuff gets rank. It's real aggressive. Mm-hmm. I got to manage it. Little Blue Stem's just, it's so nice. Favorite soft mass tree?
See, I played a trick here.
I did, too. I played the system big time.
I did, too. I went American Plum.
So did I.
I was like, I'm getting two shrubs in here. I'm doing it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
He's not going
to
know.
Because, you know, I expected, you know, try to trick you. Are you going to say apple, pear? What are you going to say?
But I beat the game, baby.
Persimmon?
No.
Yeah, I went with American Plum as well. Hard mass tree.
I said bur oak.
Okay.
I just can't get enough of it.
I went with a different direction. I went with something that is on my radar. It's very cool.
I know what you meant.
And it's one of those that's like, man, we forget about how much of a role this thing played. And everybody talks about the American chestnut. No. But if you look at the native range, you see the American chestnut goes into the northeast, down through into the Midwest. If you look at the range of the Ozark chinkapin or the Ozark chestnut, it's the southern chestnut that mm-hmm. went all the way across this span. So that's what I went with. And we're super excited. You know, we got some stuff on the radar with this tree, and it's just definitely one of my that I'm going to be let's get them in the ground, baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Favorite forb. I couldn't do it.
Surprisingly. Well, and I was like, I saw forb, and I was like, hmm.
I just tried to go forward. Broad. You can do legume.
I went broad.
Okay.
Dude, I went blackberry.
Okay.
For multiple reasons. One, because I absolutely love them. They're perfect this time of year from just going walking around the woods and just eating
them.
Yeah,
they're great for chiggers. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But they also provide tons of cover, tons of forage, opportunity for songbirds to nest in, a wide variety of critters eat the fruit. They grow all over the place too. I mean, yes, they can be, you know, pretty tough to manage. But truthfully, I don't think they are. But they're all over this country. So yeah. I went with just blackberry.
I went with two, Indian paintbrush, because I love that color.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite colors, and it's kind of that first like, ooh, spring is here.
Spring's
you
here.
Can chase turkeys and see Indian paintbrush.
Right.
And then I went with Prairie Blazing Star.
Yep.
Because that is the root system, the showiness, the amount of pollinators that use it.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
It's coming on.
Let's go with
too.
Favorite outdoor activity that's not hunting.
I'm gonna go just a good kayak float.
Gotcha. I said fish in rivers.
River. Yep.
Outdoor item that you would receive as a gift. So if somebody's just like buying you a gift and it's like, you know, you get some very random things. If you have a brother-in-law, and they're like, well, I know he's into hunting, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, gosh, what's he going to gift me? And he gifts you this. You're like, sweet, he did good.
I know what yours is.
Mine's always flashlight.
Yeah. I'm going to go with, like, hunting packs.
Okay, yeah, backpack.
Like a backpack, yeah.
Fanny packs,
fanny
really
pack.
Your style.
Yeah, the over-shoulder fanny pack.
No, the one in the front.
No, I don't have that. or like, even, like, turkey vests. Like, I love, like, all these compartments to put on my gear.
Yeah.
I love those.
Favorite book that's fiction? Mine's easy. As a kid, it was Hatchet.
Hatchet,
and,
yeah.
And
Gary
I don't read fiction books anymore.
I didn't even put one down.
Yeah, so Hatchet was mine, and that whole series from Gary Paulsen.
Yeah, I did. So I read those.
I went with favorite book nonfiction. Mine's easy. The Journals of Lewis and Clark. Read it years ago, then recently read it. New man, I love that
the
one.
Bible.
Oh, there you go.
Trump card.
Yeah. Well, thanks for making me look like a heathen.
Yeah.
Favorite line of false information. This is the last one.
Yeah.
You threw that one on me late.
So go ahead, share yours. I'm going to try to think of one here right quick.
As a kid, I remember this one. Cows bedded down means deer bedded down.
Yeah. Oh, cows are feeding. Better get to the woods. Well, that means
hey, you guys see the cows are up feeding. You better head to the woods. Like, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, gosh.
What a bunch of nonsense.
Because I can't think of one. All the quotes that you hear.
Oh, I do have one more.
The quotes you hear about, like...
When from the east, deer move least. When from the east, deer fish bite the least.
I hadn't heard that one. Some of the moon stuff.
Yeah.
Like just the straight moon phase stuff.
Yeah.
That always cracks
me up.
Well,
the rut's going to be 20 days later this year because the rut's in December.
I'm not kidding.
Or the full moon's in December.
I saw an article the other day that was like, 2019 rut predictors. And I was like, dude, they had the date wrong. I thought it was like from last year. I was like, how'd they get the date wrong? Then I like looked at it. I was like, they're actually talking about it right now. It's like, y'all, I guarantee you it's going to happen
on
in November. Like, what do you mean rut predictions?
Yeah.
Come on. Give me a break.
Favorite trendy. And this is kind of like favorite as in favorite. We're saying this sarcastically. But your favorite trendy silver bullet project.
Oh, gosh. Oh, we've golly. I was just talking
maybe
to your
just
brother.
Leave that one in the air
for next week.
Oh man,
that's the hook. Get him to come back and listen.
I don't know.
I was talking with your brother last week. I said we just need to do some absolutely awful spoof
parody
videos.
I thought of that. I was thinking that just today. Listen to one of the podcasts, and this guy does parody videos. I'm like, boy, that would be really funny. Like, I was thinking, like, I ought to do a parody video next fire season. It's like five things, or not even parody, but five things you don't want to hear on the fire line. Spot.
Yeah.
Hey, bring the blower.
Yeah. Well, what cued that conversation with Chad the other day was we were actually driving past basically that woodland restoration the savanna and all the flowers and the grasses that were coming back. And I just kind of hit me just being ignorant. I was just like, you know what? I tell you what, I'd like to see just a solid stand of switchgrass come back underneath all these pretty little oaks.
Yeah,
you got
switchgrass.
Out here. You know, it's
the
like,
silver bullet bedding.
Yeah. That's a good one. I think kind of the whole emphasis on water holes too.
Yeah.
Water plays a role, but it's not. I just go back to like the whole maintenance thing of it all. That would probably be mine. Water. I'm just gonna go with water hole. Minerals pretty good.
If I had a property that had water holes on it, it had.
And I'm talking about
like the fruit trees everywhere. It had tons of clover. Yeah, you're talking about artificial pools.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just water in general.
Yeah. Oh, they don't need to drink.
That needed hinge cutting. Like I would be like, if I see that property or I meet the man who's got that property and he's doing all that, I want his job because he's got way more time than I have to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. Put out feeders. Another time, one that just sucks the life out of you, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sucks the money out of your wallet and the life out of
your
soul.
Robs you blind.
You know, to me, do I dare? But I definitely, you know, the silver bullet project. Woof. Man. You know what? I'm going to say food plots. That's the one that gets me because so many people devote so much time to food plots. And it may only be a 2% of the entire property.
Well, and I think,
and I feel
it's
like
important.
Too many people do all this work on food plots, and they do some technique, and they're like, oh, look, turkeys have a poult. Look at all the food. That's all because of the food plots.
Yeah.
You know, it's got big antlers. See, well, look at this big deer. This is because of my food plots.
I've seen more 5%. Fawns this year than ever. And I tell you what, I cleared out another quarter acre.
Yeah, and it's because of my food plots. Like, that's the... Silver bullet food plots. And I love food plots.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like, come on. They're not a habitat management tool. They're not habitat management. You know, by definition, they don't fit habitat management or even habitat. And at the same time, they're really almost always a very small percentage of your property. So there you go. Take it away.
But they still have...
They're
cool.
They're
cool. You can't basically put them on a pedestal and say everything that happens on my property revolves around this.
It might be the ultimate silver bullet, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Hopefully, you enjoyed it as you listened to it, and you got to hear. Hopefully, you know, maybe listen to it again. Write all yours down. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts.
I'd love to hear the most. Your the one that surprised you the most. Maybe an answer that came out.
Yeah.
We'll post it on social media and get your guys' feedback.
For sure. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again. Love you guys for always joining us. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.
Yeah.